have to proclaim it to the world. And you can say, all right, teach me. But if you don't admit you're wrong, you deny yourself the capacity to learn what's right. And yet, this doesn't mean that you deflate your ego and make of it a carpet on which people walk. That's not necessary either. That's not God's will. I think God wants in man a healthy ego, but not an overblown ego. Jesus would do anything to restore self-respect to a man who lacked it, or to restrain it in a man who had it. Ego is like air pressure in your tires. Lord, if they're flat, let's pump them up. But let's not overinflate them. You can run into a blowout, see? And there's a nice balance. It's like walking a tightrope. I've chuckled many times where the Blue Book says we can't appraise ourselves. And I've thought about Willie. And if I look at the asset side of my balance sheet, I can be pretty proud.
Oh, you can rationalize.
But gee, if I look at the liability side, I wonder if I have any right to take up elbow room here on Earth. You know what I mean? Men all too often forget that God is the greatest experience in human existence. Other experiences are limited in their nature and content. But the experience of God has no limits, save those of the creature's comprehension capacity. And this very experience is in itself capacity enlarging. When men search for God, they are searching for everything. When they find God, they have found everything. The search for God is the unstinted bestowal of love, attended by amazing discoveries of new and greater love to be bestowed. That says it pretty well. 1289, paragraph 3.
All true love is from God, and man receives the divine affection as he himself bestows this love upon his fellows. It is something that we cannot teach.
You know, let's read the next paragraph. All true love is from God, and man receives the divine affection as he himself bestows this love upon his fellows. Love is dynamic. It can never be captured. It is alive, free, thrilling, and always moving. Man can never take the love of the Father and imprison it within his heart. The Father's love can become real to mortal man only by passing through that man's personality, as he in turn bestows this love upon his fellows. The great circuit of love is from the Father, through sons to brothers, and hence to the Supreme. The love of the Father appears in the mortal personality by the ministry of the indwelling adjuster. Such a God-knowing son reveals this love to his universe brethren, and this fraternal affection is the essence of the love of the Supreme. I probably am, yes, Burke. What is it I'm going to do? Reveal it unto me.
I just wondered if tonight you were going to forward again.
Yeah, I would very much like tonight to wrestle like Jakey with the angel. You never make first downs, but it's fun to carry the ball. That's a mixed metaphor. Now, any part of the forward you want to talk about? I mean, tonight, like, we will split hairs. I thought this afternoon with some freshmen in the group, it was much better to take an overview of the forward. But tonight we'd get right down to cases if you want to do that.
Well, many may like details, you know, so
tonight
Minnie will be cutting into little fine pieces.
Tonight Minnie May will unscrew the inscrutable.
Huh?
Yeah, glad that I didn't give enough details.
When
he sure did,
I have been criticized for my attitude at that meeting. No end, and I appreciate all the
criticism. Well, she did such a fine job, but she just didn't get into detail enough.
Oh, here's a man, and can divide with more dividing.
Before we go to dinner, and before he gets started on these details, did you have anything that you wanted to ask Bill about? Since this is your first meeting with him.
We only have about an hour until dinner.
We're going to quit at 5:30.
We're going to quit around 5:30.
What time do you say?
Oh, 5:30. I've been outvoted before, 5:30.
All right, let's quit at 5:30. When do we meet again, sir?
7:30.
7:30?
I've outvoted twice.
Pardon me, I heard several answers.
When are we going to quit?
Well, if we quit at 5:30, we should start at 7.
When are we going to quit?
We're going to go until
9.
Quit at 9.
I'm not going to get out on vote on this. Plus, everybody won't, and then I'm going to vote.
You want to quit at 9?
What time? When do you want to quit, Bill?
Well, we quit formally at 9, and we sometimes sat around here just talking till 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
We'll turn off the recording devices at 9, how about that?
And we reassemble at what was it, 7?
I didn't say, I asked. 5:30 we quit, and 7 o'clock we come together. Is that
and
agreeable?
And at 9 o'clock we turn off the machine.
Yeah.
The party starts at 9, man. Don't miss being here.
Okay.
Well, where are you
is there something you want to talk about?
I don't think of anything right now.
We can talk about the Blue Book, or we can talk about Burke, or any other protean subject. Complex.
I really am very proud of Burke's progress in the way.
She knew me.
She's grateful that I'm leaving.
Oh.
She knew her when she was practically exclusively on Beverly Hills. She knew her when she was about 99% Beverly Hills.
Well, who is Beverly
Hills? Well, she doesn't know about Beverly. We're facing this.
Is that all going on tape?
Yeah, it's going on tape.
Shut up.
Strike it from the record. This is after
let's turn this off.
They're about Seraphim. They run the planet. I would say for one of everyone else's here, there's probably 1,000 Seraphim. They completely outnumber everyone else. There are, I forgot my exact figures, but I think there are about half as many Seraphim on the planet as there are people. Does that sound reasonable?
Half as many?
You know, I can look it up and give you some. I know where this is. But it gives a kind of an idea of how many of them there are. Well, it's always in the place I don't look. Angels run this planet. They constitute the 12 departments of planetary. Have you got it?
Oh, I got the seraphic.
They constitute the 12 departments of seraphic planetary government, like progress, churches, industry, home, education. They're all divided up. And I sort of visualize the chief of each of these departments as being kind of like a secretary in the president's cabinet. The presidency is a little bit odd. We have a resident governor general here currently, and there's a prime minister as well as the resident governor general. The prime minister is a primary supernatant from paradise. You got it?
Page 418, Tower Palace.
Can you tell how many there are?
Tell how many she does at a time.
No, that's not what I want. I want how many there are on the planet.
Relationship to the number of metals.
And it seems to me that seraphim are the people we're sure of dealing with. They divide us up in groups.
Yeah.
Starting out with, have you got it?
421.
Yeah, here we go. Let's write up for him. There's, there's a little over a billion seraphim present on the planet. That's on page 1250, paragraph 1. I was wrong. There's about 4 billion people, so there's about one seraphim to every 4 people here, or a seraphic pair to every 8 people. Because when you speak of a seraphim, you're always talking about a pair.
8 are wonderful.
Yeah. And 2 to 8 would be the way to express it.
Yeah.
So they kind of look after us, and they start us out in groups of 1,000, and then 500, then 100, then 10. Now, if we keep on growing, we might get an individual seraphic guardian or pair. Now, of course, that has something to do with how we survive. If we survive after we have individual guardians, you make it in 3 days. This is not a silly thing to hope to do. To fuse with your thought adjuster, I think, is kind of shooting them.
Yeah.
I don't think that's happened very often on the planet, but the papers suggest to me that survival at the end of 3 days is not an uncommon occurrence. Hence, if you want to set up a bogey to shoot for, that would be a reasonable one. You know, if you tell me you're going to fuse with your thought adjuster, my eyes will get glassy and I'll change the subject. It's just like every so often somebody in the your rancher brotherhood will, well, I had a telephone conversation that the subject is not germane, but this individual was very emotionally excited and said that he'd gotten this from his thought adjuster. Well, of course, I just won't argue then. I'm not going to tell anybody they haven't listened to their thought adjuster, but frankly, I don't believe it. But if you tell me you're going to try to make it in 3 days, I think that's a pretty good thing to shoot for. I think these seraphim coordinate all of our planetary activities. I don't think they tell us what to do, but I think they guide us. I think if we want to do something, they're apt to manipulate circumstances a little, not a lot. Just like the life carriers were very concerned about keeping a certain frog alive, because that frog carried the mutating germplasm that was going to give rise to the mammalian species. I don't think they could go but just about so far to help that frog, but they went that far and the frog survived. If they'd lost the frog, they'd had to go on to do some reassembly. I've thought about seraphic action, and let me give you one that might indicate how they work. The whole theory of heredity was in principle discovered in the middle of the last century by an Augustinian abbot by the name of Johann Gregor Mendel, hence the Mendelian law. And this old boy played around with sweet peas, among other things, and bred them and learned a lot about genetics. And nobody thought anything about it. It didn't amount to anything. Until about a generation later, near the turn of the century, 3 independent scientists in the same year made the same discovery and got into a big hassle about who should get the credit, and then discovered that old Gregor Mendel had beat him by 35 years, so they all gave him the credit. Now, the thing that I think is a little bit too hard to explain is how come 3 of them made the same discovery in the same year. That to me is a little bit, that's straining at the laws of chance. Do you follow? I've tried to speculate, how does a seraphim work with a human being? Well, I don't know. But it seemed to me that if I gave you a book and I wanted you to be sure it hit certain parts of the book, I'd underscore it. And I sort of figured that you'd be more apt to see this. I think what Seraphim might do is work inside of the human memory patterns and do some underscoring. I don't think they've put anything in there that isn't there, but I think they might underscore, italicize some things that are there. That's very crude symbolization. Yeah. And I think Seraphim compute odds. We're told that the hairs of our head could be easily numbered by a Seraphim, just casually. And she wouldn't spend her time counting them, although there are some present where that wouldn't be such a formidable task as with others. He just got it. And well, let's put it this way, J.B., no eunuch ever got bald.
And that's all true. There's a fixation process. Oh, yes, very true. So that proves a lot, right?
Certainly. That's the price we pay for being tardy and stuff.
That bill's full of jewels. I'm going to remember that.
I think these Seraphim compute probabilities many times. I think a Seraphim could make a UNIVAC green with envy at the math she could handle. And this is just an aptitude that's particular to Seraphim. They're not that good in all fields, but they happen to be mathematical prodigies. And I suspect it's because their origin is close to the origin of mind itself.
Well, now they have to do with physical things as well as spiritual ones.
Yes,
mental.
They do. Less with physical, more with mental and spiritual.
In other words, you've seen occasions where the timing and everything just dovetail so perfectly that you just knew there was a master plan in a certain person being in a certain place at a certain time under certain circumstances. So, that's really
nice. I think Seraphim's... Let me put it this way. I think Seraphim must have the equivalent of hunches. Mm-hmm. Because I think there are times when they do things because they have a feeling this is right. And then it turns out better than they realize because they're finite. I think they're responding to impulses coming out of the Supreme Being. Here. Jesus is down in Jerusalem. And he meets a trader from India by the name of Gonad, who's got a son, Ganad, who needs a tutor. And out of that meeting comes that whole tour of the Roman world. And the Blue Book says they met by apparent chance. Now this suggests to me that the authors of the papers, who themselves do some manipulating, have combed this one over to see who pulled the piano wires, and they can't find them. So there are manipulations that are even more subtle than those manipulations which are engaged in by the people who write these papers. They're up against higher level things which they can't understand, just as much as we can't understand some of their manipulations.
So that's the reason they said apparent chance?
Mm-hmm. I think they've checked that one out. It was too good a happening to be chance.
They don't really think it's chance. They can't prove it wasn't.
They can't prove it wasn't chance. Which tells me that there's been some sleuthing going on. Probably by the secondary midwives.
Well, I've been, all my life, I've been very aware I didn't follow the Seraphim, but I've had a great belief in them, and it has worked for me. It's already been amazing against things that have happened in my life that have just been...
Well, I would do this. I would never deny that they had a hand, and I would never feel sure of saying definitely this was their hand. Unless you look back. Well, let's put it, do what Jesus did, said. He said, if you got a seed and you're in doubt, plant it and see what kind of fruit it bears. Now, if you look back a long ways and you see that a certain amazingly fortuitous thing bore much fruit over many years, yeah, I'd be very suspicious about that circumstance. But I would never definitely say I know that this was a put together job. I would never say it wasn't either. I met a chap one night who we met under very adverse circumstances. We met with many martinis in front of us. And I discovered he was about to, in essence, tell God to go to hell. In other words, if this is the kind of a God that runs this kind of a world, the heck with it, see? And I looked under the table because I wasn't in exactly the pink of condition to talk to him. And as usual, there were just no angels present. You always look for them and you can't find them. And so I said, all right, evidently this is my job and I wish it were under more favorable circumstances. And I had a little talk with the boss and I said, after all, this is your business, not mine, and if you want to be of a little assistance now, I could sure use it. I don't ask him for help in my business, but this was his business. And I will say this, the words came awful easy. And afterwards, I sold this boy a bill of goods. Changed his whole attitude. He changed his attitude toward life and toward God. Afterwards, I said to him, this was a lucky meeting, wasn't it? He says, amazing. I said, was it chance or wasn't it chance? And I said, always be wise enough to ask that question, but never be so stupid as to answer it. You see, if you start answering the question, then pretty soon you begin to read God into everything. In the later history of Judaism, they had an expression, I think I can pronounce it, Bath Kuol, B-A-T-H, Q-U-O-L, and there's an apostrophe in there somewhere, which is the Spirit spoke to me saying. Well, this thing got to be used so much of the time, like the Spirit spoke to me saying, I should touch you for $50, and then, of course, if you believe in the Spirit, you better give me the $50. That finally the rabbis just outlawed it and said there aren't going to be any more bath calls, because the only reason anybody had for doing anything was my adjuster advised me to do this. And as the papers say, better ignore the adjuster once than erroneously think you've heard him when it's your own subconscious mind. I like to think of these seraphim because they seem real friendly, and we're going to be with them all the way up the line. If we don't have personal guardians here on Earth, we will get them on the mansion world.
I did have a question on thought adjusters. When you said, well, go to hell, we matched up the plan so
yeah.
Often. How can we be sure? I asked this in reverse, well, go, but how can we be sure that we are following our thought adjusters?
Do you feel happier within yourself?
You mean on a certain decision or something?
No, in the overall, year by year. Are you more useful to your fellow men? Do you love God more? Are you sure that the future is for you?
You have a greater peace of mind.
Yes. Or peace of soul. Not so sure. Well, probably peace of mind, too.
When you have a feeling that you're in the right place at the right time doing the right thing.
This, I think, is... Yes, yes, I would say so. Yes. It's all secondary evidence, but mostly it's what you feel in your heart or soul.
In other words, it's about all you have to go on.
Yes, that's right. Do you feel God? Awfully easy to feel, I think. Do you feel him more? Is it a growing thing? Is it a sane thing? Can you feel God without tearing your hair, you know, and getting all excited?
Well,
It should be a quiet field. Might be very thrilling at times, but mostly is it quiet.
I think the recognition of truth,
are, not instead of
spirit of truth, just the recognition of truth. I think that is an
indication.
Yes. That your
star judge is getting truth. Well, I trust God without any reservations. And I just am sure that if I were making a fool of myself, he'd find some way of kicking me in the backside real hard. This, I suspect, I've experienced more than once in this lifetime. And always remember that the indelibility of the memory stenciling is in direct proportion to the discoloration of the gluteal region.
Boy, I got that on tape.
which is a nice way of saying...
How pink is your bowhine?
Yeah, the deeper the bruise in the backside, the longer you'll remember the admonition. Yeah.
Hey, Bill, wouldn't your blueprint for survival on the bottom of page 12 come up for her? How could she be sure of being more in tune with her?
Bottom of page 12.
1207. 1206. 1206. Blueprint for survival according to Bill Fenton. Notation made a year ago. I'll take 12.
Confusion. Being puzzled. Even sometimes discouraged and distracted does not necessarily signify resistance to the leadings of the indwelling adjuster. Such attitudes may sometimes connote lack of active cooperation with the divine monitor, and may therefore somewhat delay spiritual progress. But such intellectual emotional difficulties do not in the least interfere with a certain survival of the God-knowing soul. Ignorance alone can never prevent survival. Neither can confusional doubts nor fearful uncertainty. Only conscious resistance to the adjuster's leading can prevent the survival of the evolving immortal soul. You must not regard cooperation with your adjuster as a particularly conscious process, for it is not. But your motives and your decisions, your faithful determinations and your supreme desires do constitute real and effective cooperation. You can consciously augment adjuster harmony by 1. Choosing to respond to divine leading, sincerely basing the human life on the highest consciousness of truth, beauty, and goodness, and then coordinating these qualities of divinity through wisdom, worship, faith, and love. 2. Loving God and desiring to be like Him. Genuine recognition of the divine fatherhood and loving worship of the heavenly parent. 3. Loving man and sincerely desiring to serve him. Wholehearted recognition of the brotherhood of man, coupled with an intelligent and wise affection for each of your fellow mortals. Intelligent, wise. 4. Joyful acceptance of cosmic citizenship. Honest recognition of your progressive obligations to the Supreme Being. Awareness of the interdependence of evolutionary man and evolving deity. This is the birth of cosmic morality and the dawning realization of universal duty. You can't hurt God the Father except in terms of His love, but you can hurt the Supreme Being. Quantitatively as well as qualitatively. You can add or subtract in relation to the Supreme, not in a large way. I think determining to survive is nothing more than taking out your first papers as a cosmic citizen.
Well,
You don't get citizenship until you fuse with your adjuster. But that doesn't mean you can't have an application in for your first papers.
Well,
if you folks don't ask questions about the forward, I will assume it's completely comprehensible. And if it is, then there's a few questions I'd like to put to you, because there's a couple of parts in here I find difficult.
I don't believe that, Bill.
Well, when you get to it, just mail it.
Sin in the local system. They promoted it actively. But I don't think sin originated in Satania with Lucifer.
Well, the thing that I was wondering, I think it says over here, without knowledge, are considered sinners, you know, if they did.
That's right.
Unknowingly. And I just thought that he might have suggested to the people at that time that they could rebel against God.
That's right.
Which was, might be a...
He actually instigated a rebellion, which enabled people to join a sinful cause.
That's
Wilma, what do you want to talk about? The missing member of the phonology company?
No. I'd like to have you elaborate on that. You said that they were divided into the...
Yes.
Considering that the seven super universes and all the planets who are putting people into the
Finality core,
could we get the idea that there aren't too many finalities actually?
No. I think there are large numbers. I think there are very large numbers of finalities. Because there's over 5 trillion planets that are generating people.
Well, when they just drive up 9999 to a core.
To a company. We don't know how many companies there are in a core, though. That's an unknown number. This number might be exceedingly large.
Oh, well, we got a long time to...
Yeah.
Those things are really not important. You just get
to
wondering about them.
They ought to put one more in there.
Well, they say they know he's missing, but they don't altogether agree on who it's going to be, or even what it's going to be.
Well, they have temporary one there now.
Yeah. Chief of whatever group's assigned. The internal composition of a finaliter company, except they've got room for only 10 non-human, non-seraphic members. I've got a feeling that mortals make up the bulk. Seraphim are there in appreciable numbers. Well, let me make a guess. Out of 1,000, there'd be 850 mortals and 140 seraphim, or 139. And then there'd be 10 non-mortal, non-seraphic members. You might have an Adam, secondary midware. They suspect Machavendi Melchizedek is going into the finality corps. The Melchizedek who lived here in the days of Abraham. One Havona native. The chief of the Company of Gravity Messengers is a member of the Finaliter Company. And that's the way I visualize. I think the only ones that are there besides humans in any numbers are seraphim, and I think the mortals far outnumber the seraphim, say 3-1 or 4-1. Then you'd have a few odds and ends, and there probably are some folks in there that haven't even been revealed to us. So they've got room for one Havona native and the chief of the gravity messengers. So that leaves 8 more spaces for non-seraphim, non-mortals. Now, how many finality companies there are, heaven only knows. I suspect it's a tremendous number.
Is it registered in every day?
Well, how many are organized as companies on Paradise? Now, Tabba Manches evidently completed his tour of duty as a member of a finality company. And apparently he's working on his own now.
He's working on his master's
degree. Yeah, he's got his bachelor's. He's working on his master's. do you want to ask me questions about the forward, or shall I ask you folks? That's a fair offer, isn't it? This way, somebody will get to learn something. Let's just go right down the line, starting on page 2. And of course, we can spend 2 weeks on page 2. But what bugs you? Of the potential level as pre-zero. And you get some associativeness in there. I think the zero age sees the beginning of the associative function of deity. But I don't think the associative function is completed until the first universe age, at the dawn of which you have the Trinity, which is the first real association of deity or unification of deity. Yes, you sure do. Havona, practically considered, is a creative expression of deity. Except, of course, it has no origin, so it's a little hard to apply the word creative. But we have to think of Havona as a creation. I don't think you get the evolutional function until the second universe age. That's the one we're living in now. I see no evolution in Havona until the second age. First age Havona is non-evolutionary, or a better term would be pre-evolutionary.
I'd like for you to talk a little bit about creative.
Well, an act of creation simply takes something out of the realm of a potential and makes an actual out of it.
But what was? This happened, are you talking now on creative, you can be talking about the creation that occurred in Havona.
Yes, except Havona never was created.
No, I mean after yes. Havona was created,
yes.
I mean...
Well, take for example, secondary supernathim. There were no secondary supernathim in Havona in the first universe age. Secondary supernathim were not created in Havona until the Havona pilgrims and the Paradise pilgrims entered Havona.
Well, now you're talking about a transitional zone then between creative and evolution.
No, a secondary supernathim didn't evolve. A secondary supernathim was created, bang, just like that, by one of the seven master spirits.
But the seven master spirits were created. I mean, they were in the creative.
They were eternal.
No, uh-huh. The seven master spirits are post-eternal. Let me clear this up a little bit.
Will you give us...
I'll give
you... Well, I don't believe you know what I'm asking. I'm trying to ask you, right?
Let me clear up this transition.
At the close of a zero age, would you give us a personal inventory?
Just a second. At the close of a zero age? Yeah, let me do this.
Inventory of a whole personality.
This is appendix four. No, I can't.
Burke can.
Open question about transcendentalism. Because if they contributed to the planning for Havona, they had to be there then.
And the three absolutes?
Well, that's not actual. It's an inventory of actuality. Three
inventory of actual physical being. There's one perfect machine and two personalities.
That's correct.
At the close of the 08.
Right.
You aren't going to include the absolutes?
Yes, but they're
oh.
potentials. This is an inventory of actualized reality.
I see what you mean. Okay.
Now.
And you get the same thing at the close of the sixth universe age in terms of experiential reality. You have two experiential deities and a power nucleus, the master universe. History repeats itself.
Now, is it too cumbersome and are they too numerous for you to inventory the personalities and the physical things at the close of the first universe?
That's what I'm going to read you.
Thank you.
I won't give you complete inventory, but I'll give you what you want. A, the unqualified concept of the first age. Do you want the references on this? I get it studded. But it would be a nuisance. I'll just read it. The third person eternalized simultaneously with Havona. Since the conjoint actor is eternal, so also is the central universe. Like Havona, the Havona natives never were created. Now let's go back here. I don't know where there's a better thing of what you want. Universes are constructed. B. these unique space bodies are at the periphery of the central creation. These two circuits are so large that they hide it only even from nearby outlying universes. Page 153, paragraph 6 and 8, page 154, paragraph 1 and 3. These dark space bodies are so massive that the total mass of the central creation is actually greater than the mass of the seven super universes. Page 129, paragraph 9. Their physical construction and even their physical properties are not like any other kind of energy materialization that is found anywhere else. Page 126, paragraph 3. This is the physical picture of the central universe in the first age. So far as we are informed, except for the later stationing of power centers on the pilot worlds of the Havona circuits, page 321, paragraph 4, and the integration of its power supervision with the superuniverses, there has been no change in the central creation from a physical standpoint. But from the standpoint of personalities and personality activities, there has been much change. Is this what you want, Clyde?
Right.
Personality activities in Havona. Havona in the first...
That's still in the first age.
Yeah. Havona in the first age must have been a purely existential universe. It could have contained nothing of an experiential nature. As nearly as we can determine, the seven master spirits were the first personalizations of experiential deity. Page 110, paragraph 6. And these beings, in all creation subsequent to them, could not, therefore, have been present in Havona during the first universe age. There are no seven master spirits. Let us now consider just what eternal Havona was like in the first age. A, the worlds of the Father. The seven worlds of the Father were in existence and were being administered with the Trinitized secrets of supremacy. Page 208, paragraph 6. But the activities of these worlds must have been very different in the first age. Most of what we are told about them pertains to the affairs of the second age. Consider Ascendington in the first age. What was happening on this sphere when there were no ascenders? Page 147, paragraph 3 to 5. There were no solitary messengers. Neither were there power directors. Solitary messengers. There were no solitary messengers in existence. Page 256, paragraph 3 and 4. To be domiciled, no, neither were there any power directors. Page 319, paragraph 10. To be domiciled on Solitarington. Page 146, paragraph 6. None of the descending or ascending sons of God mentioned in the papers were in existence, because all of them must post-date the infinite spirit. Therefore, none of these beings could have been domiciled on Sonarington. Page 145, paragraph 2. The sphere Divinington was undoubtedly the home world of the Father fragments. Page 144, paragraph 5 and 6. But no thought adjuster had yet gone forth to indwell a human being. There were no human beings. Father-world relationships change with the passing universe ages. Page 148, paragraph 5. In the first age, they were different from what we've been told about them in the second age. In the third age, they will undoubtedly change once more. B, the worlds of the sun. We're told very little about the seven worlds of the sun, merely that personalities do not visit these home worlds of the otherwise than personal beings originating in the eternal sun. Page 149, section 3. So far as we know, there has been no change in the function of these worlds when the first age is compared with the second. There may have been, there may not have been. C, the worlds of the spirit. On these spheres, there has been a radical change when the affairs of the first age are compared with those of the second. These are now the executive abodes of the seven master spirits. Page 150, paragraphs 2 to 6. Each of these seven spheres is the administrative clearinghouse for one of the seven superuniverses and is presided over by one of the seven supreme executives. Page 198, section 1. But in the first age, there were no master spirits. Neither were there any supreme executives, because these beings were later trinitized according to the specifications of the master spirits. Page 198, paragraph 1. What was the function of the seven worlds of the spirit in the first age? We ask this question, but the papers are silent on this point. D, the seven Havona circuits. In the first age, the billion eternal worlds of Havona were fully functional with their eternal natives. Page 157, paragraphs 2 and 3. Page 221, paragraph 4 and 5.
Bill, what did you just read, please? I lost out.
In the first age, the billion eternals' worlds of Havona were fully functional with their eternal natives, the Havona natives.
The Havona natives, okay.
And each of these billion worlds was under the perpetual rule of an eternal abbeys. Page 208, paragraph 6. But we doubt that there was any evolutionary progression on the part of the Havona natives. Page 157, paragraph 6 to 9. Page 221, paragraph 6. It seems probable that evolutionary progression did not appear as a feature of Havonan life until the Second Age. The seven circuits of Havona were in existence, but the circuit spirits were not. Page 287, paragraph 5. Neither were there any power centers on the pilot worlds of the seven circuits. Page 321, paragraph 4. There was no progression of ascenders or descenders in Havona, because this two-way progression was initiated by an event that occurred in the Second Age, the arrival of Grand Fanda. Page 270, paragraphs 3 to 6, page 291, paragraph 1. And of course, many personalities now functioning in Havona were absent in the First Age. Among these are included the graduate guides, the Havona servitals, secondary supernatants, and tertiary supernatants. In fact, just about every type of being that we know about, except the eternals of days and Havona natives, would have been missing from the seven circuits of Havona in the First Age. The central universe in the First Age was completely lacking in everything and everyone that has been introduced as a result of its becoming a nuclear creation in relation to the seven superuniverses. In the First Age, Havona had no external relationships, only relationships within itself and internal relationships with Paradise. The Isle of Paradise. In the First Universe Age, the Isle of Paradise was present, together with its numerous orders of citizens, including the transcendental super-citizens of the Eternal Isle. And of course, the architects of the Master Universe were present on Paradise, for they are the governors of the transcendentalists. The three persons of deity, the Universal Father, the Eternal Son, and the Infinite Spirit, are all present in the First Universe Age. The Paradise Trinity was in existence. It comes into being with the personalization of the Infinite Spirit, and this means that the Trinity is coexistent with the Central Universe. The three absolutes of potentiality were also present, the universal, deity, and unqualified absolutes. All of these realities are eternal, unqualifiedly eternal. The Paradise Trinity, the Paradise Deities, the three absolutes, the Paradise Isle, and Havona. All of these beings, entities, and materializations are without order. A summary or inventory of these eternal existences might read something like the following. A. The seven absolutes of infinity. First, second, and third sources and centers, the Isle of Paradise, deity, universal, and unqualified absolutes. B. The Paradise Trinity, undivided existential deity. C. The central and divine universe, Havona, and its eternal inhabitants. E. The inhabitants of Paradise, Paradise citizens and transcendentalists. This summary is the inventory of the original and existential and eternal core of reality. If we were to attempt to go back of this, we would be departing from factual reality. And then I go on to, we start on back. There's your inventory claim.
You didn't mention the Trinitas secrets of supremacy.
Yes, you did. So they were in charge of the Father's world.
I didn't hear him. I overheard.
Oh, I included them in the central and divine universe of eternal inhabitants. No, to go forward.
I got my
pin up on each world.
Yeah.
All I am, clarification that I need
of supremacy, pin up on each of the Father's worlds,
was that I inadvertently, a week ago Wednesday night, wrote down inventory of all personalities at close of 08.
And Don of First Universe.
I didn't go ahead and put that down.
Now, if you'd like to go
at
forward.
At the close of 08, is that
is that inventory correct?
Yeah. You've got the Fowler's son.
But I need to put down my notes.
I've got the same John.
And
maybe.
There's a question mark.
Now, if you want to go forward, we might explore the terminus of the first age. Before the near times of eternity. When the infinite spirit had personalized, it completed the existential cycle of deity personalization. And the next deity personalizations are not coordinate, but are subordinate and sub-absolute, and are the seven master spirits. These deity personalizations are not existential. They are experiential. The seven spirits of the Havona circuits are coexistent with the master spirits. They are not a part of the original Havona creation. They probably appeared as a response of the master spirits to the emerging purpose of the Supreme Being. God the Supreme is not a past eternal being. He was in existence in Havona as a spirit person before the organization of the seven superuniverses. Prior to the near times of eternity and the creation of the power directors, the force organizers had jurisdiction over the energy circuits outside of Havona. Deduction. Energy activities were taking place in the superuniverse space level long before the organization of the seven superuniverses. C. The near times of eternity and the dawn of time. Following the creation of the spirits of the circuits in Havona, the conjoint actor created the solitary messengers. They have existed since the, quote, near times of eternity, unquote. Nothing is older than they are except the circuits of Havona and Paradise. They are the first of the creations of the infinite spirit to be conscious of time, to be personalized in time and spiritualized in space. Solitary messengers appeared in the dawn of time. Deduction. The dawn of time is synonymous with the near times of eternity, because each expression is used to designate the time of the origin of solitary messengers.
Stuart Bell, do I understand? Have I lost out somewhere? You are still reading about the first universe.
No, I'm reading about the beginning of the second universe.
Okay.
The power directors and the power centers have existed since the near times of eternity. This is the dawn of the second age. The power directors were created by the master spirits, and with the master spirits are creators of the power centers. Probably the supreme executives were trinitized by the Paradise Trinity in accordance with the specifications of the master spirits. The last order of Paradise citizens was created at the time of the Trinity mandate, which set forth the plan for the superuniverses. The seven spirits of the Havona circuits were discovered to be in function when the grand universe was organized. They are in liaison with the supreme executives and synchronized with the supreme. The 50 reflective spirits, including Majestan, were created in the dawn of time. The master spirits and the supreme being participated in this episode. D. The beginning of superuniverse history. The first entry in recorded history on Paradise is the record of the trinitization of the Ancients of Days. Deduction. Anything prior to the creation of the Ancients of Days is prehistory and pertains to the near times of eternity, or to the dawn of time, or to the first universe age. Early in the materialization of the post-Havona creations, they were divided into seven segments, and the headquarters worlds of each superuniverse were constructed. The Ancients of Days have ruled the supercreations from near eternity. Now there, as near as I can find this, is an inventory in sequence of the transitional zone between the first and the second universe age.
Then you spoke of the spirit of the supreme being, probably existing.
The supreme
as a spirit person. Yeah. Well, wouldn't there be others besides the supreme?
Oh, yes.
wouldn't include that then as in your inventory of the close of the first universe?
No, I wouldn't. But I would put it in before the second universe age got fully underway. See, I visualize the second age, Wilma, as starting out in low gear.
Well, you named a number of things there that there's doubt as to just exactly.
They're post-first age, mm-hmm. but they're before the second age is fully functional.
Mm-hmm.
There's a twilight zone in here. You could call it the close of the first age, or you could just as well call it the dawn of the second age. You see, until you've got your seven super universes organized and the Ancients of Days in charge, the second age hasn't really. We haven't gotten into the full daylight of the second age. We're in the dawning. Does that answer your question?
Right, Bill. Well,
now, you want to talk about space?
I was hung on too many dadgum people, too many personalities being in evidence that close to zero age, and I didn't put a comma in at the dawning of the first universe. That's what had me.
Let's talk about paradise then. I'd rather read this than ad lib it because I can
time
give you precise.
At the close of the
ma'am?
Time came into being at the end of the first universe age.
Can I read that next? the moment of the dawn of the first universe age, at the moment of the appearance of Havona, paradise makes a bestowal of that which is to become the material substance of all the universes of all the future. This bestowal is an eternity event. I'm leaving out all the footnotes here. By the term eternity event, we understand that it is not a continuing process. It happens just once. This study advances the viewpoint that this bestowal of the stuff of the uncreated universes is an unlimited bestowal. It is not finite. What is the nature of this endowment? Well, first of all, it must have been preceded by the appearance of space. And we know that space itself is an endowment of paradise. Given the existence of space, then we may conceive of this endowment as a certain potency, potential, with which the volume of space was charged, hence the term space potency. This potency in space passed from the paradise source to the control of the functional presence of the unqualified absolute in space. The unqualified absolute receives this space charge and evermore acts as its revealer, regulator, and repository.
What is the rest of that? Exactly.
Yeah, page 126, paragraph 4 and 5. The unqualified absolute is present in the zero age, but if there is no space, could have had no space presence. Neither could this absolute have a function in relation to space potency prior to the paradise bestowal of this stuff of the uncreated universes. The transition from the zero age to the first age could hardly change the nature of the unqualified, but it certainly does modify the presence and the function of this absolute. We are informed that the unqualified absolute is functionally limited to space. We deduce that this means pervaded space, and that it relates to a regulatory function in relation to space potency. We are further informed that this absolute is the all-efficient mechanizer of all universes of the past, present, and future. We deduce that this means some kind of overcontrol that utterly ignores time. Influence of the deity absolute. Much as the unqualified absolute is the mechanizer of the past, present, future universes, so the deity absolute is presented as the all-powerful activator of these creations. It is difficult to imagine just how this is done, because the deity absolute does not have a space presence, just a universal presence. It's an interesting distinction, isn't it? Possibly this relationship takes place through the universal absolute. Influence of the conjoint actor. The infinite spirit could possibly be involved in the original bestowal of space potency. We advance the thought that the bestowal of space potency may be a paradise repercussion to the appearance of the spirit. The paper states, the infinite spirit activates paradise. The conjoint actor pervades all space. The spirit probably initiates motion in space. It is reasonable, then, to deduce that the conjoint actor is directly concerned with space potency, subsequent to the original bestowal, and that his appearance may have something to do with that which activated paradise in the bestowal of space potency. The question of the central universe. Did the triata which constitutes the physical universe of Havona materialize as a direct paradise bestowal, or did it pass through some potential stage involving the unqualified absolute? To this question, we offer no speculative answer. So much for space. That's all I can dredge out of the papers, or could at that time. Maybe I'll find something more. Does that give you what you want, Clyde?
I don't think there was any space prior to the voting. I think that just prior to the appearance of Havona, or concurrent with the appearance of Havona and the infinite spirit, paradise bestows space and space potency.
Maybe one of my difficulties is that I find it hard to conceive of non-space.
All right, think of mid-space.
Mid-space, I like it.
All right.
Okay.
I just would say that in the zero age, today, space doesn't touch paradise at any point. It gets close to paradise. But it's mid-space that actually touches paradise. And in the zero age, outside of paradise, there was nothing but mid-space.
If you're going to speak of mid-space and space, what's your third one?
All right. Mid-space and non-space. I think maybe today I got the word non-space.
I use the term not space in the appendix. You won't find that. You won't find that in the blue book. No,
it's only
not
space instead of mid-space.
How can you get mid-space?
30 days might help.
Well, it separates the two extensions of space.
Not space.
Well, I said you have to understand non-space or not space.
I use the term not space.
I'm working on not space and space.
Yeah.
I think so because mid-space is wrong. It's reading the third.
Well, I'm staying away from that. There is.
You have.
Well, you have unpervaded space, Wilma. But I've tried to avoid that all throughout here. It's bad enough to have this. Not space.
I think of unpervaded. I mean, unpervaded space is being out of space. Isn't that right?
No, ma'am.
What is unpervaded space?
Unpervaded space is the vertical extension of space above and below paradise.
Oh. Yeah.
Universe space is the horizontal extension. Now, not space does exist in between or mid, in between these two space extensions.
Then that would be the third one.
Mm-hmm. I avoid unpervaded space in here, though. I get enough trouble.
You're going to write a paper on unpervaded space on these days, I know.
It'll be blank.
In this billion-year cycle, when this Maltese crawls, expands and contracts. Don't it intrude upon
mid-space?
Yeah.
Sure, I think mid-space is elastic.
So is the Maltese crawl.
Sure, as the vertical arms contract, the donut expands. Because it's a Maltese cross, only because we take a vertical cross section. Actually, the horizontal extension is shaped like a donut. Or if you want a fancy term, it's a toroid.
That's a good word.
Isn't that a dandy? I learned that from my engineering pal, Sandy Wall. He says, universe space is toroidal in shape. I says, what? He says, to you, peasant donut shape.
Now I've got one more question. Why did paradise toss space potency back to unqualified?
I don't know the answer to that.
Does it
matter? I just assume that it used all it wanted, all it needed no more, and it just gave it back to where it comes.
As good as anything.
Your guess is just as good as mine. That's a good one. Put it this way. Paradise bestowed the stuff of an infinite material universe. Some of that crystallized in the central universe. The rest of it has been slowly crystallizing out ever since in the spiral nebula, which is the beginning of material creation. As far as paradise is concerned, the job is all done. But as far as the unqualified absolute is concerned, he's been unraveling this thing ever since, and the unravelings are the nebulae, sun, planets, dark islands, meteors, what
the old lady needed, huh?
Yeah. You want to take up time?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Bill, I'm sorry that you didn't call your pages on that space, because getting it on the...
I'll give you all the references. The original references on space.
Why don't you just call them and
I will. Page 120,
3 and 4. Page 124, paragraph 6. Page 120, paragraph 4. Page 135, paragraph 2. Page 1297, paragraph 7. Page 135, paragraph 2. Page 133, paragraph 10. Page 125, paragraph 3.
Before you go to time,
do you want the rest of them? The discussion of the unqualified absolute revolves around page 123, paragraph 3, page 637, paragraph 3, page 124, paragraph 6, page 469, paragraph 3 to 6, page 126, paragraph 4 and 5, page 133, paragraph 5, page 14, paragraph 3. Concerning the deity absolute, page 14, paragraph 3, page 137, paragraph 3. Concerning the conjoint actor, page 101, paragraph 8, page 98, paragraph 5, page 133, paragraph 6. Concerning the question of the central universe, page 470, paragraph 7, page 154, paragraphs 5 and 6.
He did most of this. The pilot was waiting for an operation up in Chicago at the hospital.
I didn't have anything else.
Did the research he had.
Time?
Time. You want to answer one question?
Yes.
Why do you think space seems to originate the whole paradise?
Because the papers say so.
Let's not take care of it.
And otherwise I would have...
Doesn't that make sense to you?
Yeah. Otherwise, I would have no notions about where it came from.
But since it does tell you, then why would you think that it would?
Because that's where pervaded and unpervaded space run together. And where one can be transformed into the other. And where I suspect new space might be generated. Because I think space has got to increase.
You haven't said the thing I wanted you to say yet. Quite.
What do you answer?
Well, don't you think nether paradise would be the natural spot for space to originate?
The book says so. And I have
make
no...
Sense?
Yeah,
make
it
sense?
Yeah, it seems logical. They say time seemingly originates just above upper paradise and space just below nether paradise.
But it
doesn't
make sense.
Yeah, but it says they are originating different ways.
Indirectly, time.
Yeah.
Now, that's what I want you to explain.
I can't. I'll read you the best I've read.